Any good Iron Sheik stories? I know you have a lot of Iron Sheik stories, probably. He was in the territory when you were down
there.
Well,
I mean, I've told the ones on the radio in the last few. I mean, do you want to hear those?
Yeah, definitely. A lot of people might not know that. Cause,
Well, Sheik and I had, we were sharing a room over in Hawaii, and I wasn't going to stay up late that night, and I left the light on to the bathroom, and I was laying in bed, and it was dark in the room except for the light in the bathroom, and I heard the door open, and it was the Sheik. Well, I saw the Sheik's silhouette come by, and then all of a sudden it was like eclipse, and I thought he had turned the light out, and then all of a sudden the light was back on, and he had had this like 400-pound girl to come in the room with him, and you know, you could hear the mattress when she sat on the bed, you could hear the mattress screaming, and they left the bathroom light on, so the only thing I could see, like a silhouette, like he was karate chopping her or something. I didn't know what the hell was going on, so I fell asleep. When I woke up the next morning, she was gone, and I went and opened the curtains up trying to get the Sheik up, and there was blood all over the place. I mean, there was blood. It looked like Helter Skelter. There was like blood all over the wall, and you know, on the ceilings and everything. And apparently, this girl was on her period, and whatever they were doing that night. Anyway, she got on the airplane the next morning. He had blood on his mustache and blood, dried blood on his fingernails and eyebrows. And it was nasty.
I'm ever in a point in my life when I have to have another pro wrestling podcast again, I might just end up reviewing Thunders.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Not much storylines going on there because nobody is paying attention to it.
You could probably
a two-hour show.
You could make a lot of it up.
Ooh, or maybe a Sunday Night Heat podcast. That was only an hour-long show. I could see us getting a Sunday Night Heat podcast off the ground.
What about Shotgun Saturday Night?
That didn't last long enough. We gotta
think
to the
future.
Oh, sure, it
did. Yeah.
Think to the future. There was
no,
a lot of
Sunday
Night
Heats. They just moved it into the arenas and then just, it was called Shotgun Saturday Night, but it was just a dumb arena show.
How long did that even last then?
I don't know. Probably not long. Your Sunday Night Heat's probably our best bet.
You could branch that off into a Velocity show after a while. Ooh. Like we start getting real successful with it because everybody's like, I love listening to you guys talk Sunday Night Heat every week. It's
Shotgun,
this new thing that's just part of my routine.
Shotgun Saturday
couldn't live
Night
it.
Turned into Velocity?
Did it?
I think so because wasn't Velocity on Saturday nights?
I'm going to tell you right now, I have no idea when Velocity was on. You got to be kidding me with these questions.
So... Well, I'll get to story, but introduction.
Which
first.
One was turned into the main event?
Oh, God. WWE's main event.
WWF C shows. There's been a lot of them. Nothing's distinguished one from the other.
Let's just.
But they keep pretending like they're retooling it into something new, and then it always just ends up the same generic jobber D show.
We've pigeonholed ourselves into making us watch this shit in order.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes it just tedious.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll do, like, you know...
It sounded like a good idea. Like, oh, we'll watch how things develop.
Yeah,
then it's just like, no, things don't develop.
Other...
You need to check in, like, once every 6 months and see if anything has changed.
There you go. So, just like other wrestling shows, just, like, jump to, like, important moments in wrestling time and, like, pick and choose what they want to talk about.
Today in wrestling history.
We'll do that, but we'll focus exclusively on WWE C shows.
Okay. Yeah.
So like we cover big moments in
big
Velocity.
Big moment for
Saturday
Night
Heat. Main
this
event.
This is when Raven debuted as the color
event.
Commentary
yeah.
guy.
This was the first time that CM Punk jobbed out on Heat as an indie jobber.
Jimmy Jacobs just beat Eddie Guerrero.
Twice. We talk about not... fun stuff like that. We talk about 80s wrestling because we're making up for past sins, I believe.
Yeah, I can feel like this is some sort of pushing the boulder up the hill, never-ending punishment for me.
But it's not punishment.
Feels appropriate.
It's not punishment for you because we're funny as fuck and we say fuck a lot.
Yeah, we make...
And that's cool.
I mean, this 1980s wrestling, not fun to watch, but yeah. fun to hear people talk about.
If you're not on the social medias, we're killing the game right now. We're getting all these celebrity followers, big names, big names.
Oh, really? Like who?
Well, I don't know if legally we're allowed to say.
I'm familiar with all of their work.
Yeah, all their works you're definitely familiar with, but they're following us, so you should be too. I'm Matt O. I do half of the funnies, the ha-has, the get-a-laughs, and the other guy, the old... Chucklehead sitting next to me is Nate Adams. Who should you be this week?
Who am I stuck being?
You're going to be whichever Basham to my whatever Basham brother.
Doug and Danny Basham?
Yeah, you're Doug to my Danny.
We're
you are Nate Adams.
Velocity Legends, Doug and Danny
since we're
Basham,
going that
the
route,
Basham brothers.
I figured I'd pick us a nice one.
Okay, ahoy, ahoy, everybody. It's nice to be here.
Yeah.
I consider myself more of the like straight man. I'm here to provide the content. I think that's a dynamic we have set up. I'm very studious. I'm very learned. I'm coming here with all sorts of just like insights and just like.
So you're the professor. I'm
yeah.
Bobby the Brain Heenan.
I'm like
so
Mike Tenay.
Yeah, we just need to get Dave in here as our Tony Schiavone.
He's chubby enough. He's been looking pretty gaunt. We're going to have to him up if he's going to come in here as our Schiavone.
Sure. But he's got that same watching paint dry kind of fun about
he's
him.
He's kind of got like a Michelle McCool look going these days, I feel like.
Ooh.
That's what he's going for. Taker's really got him in the gym.
Yeesh. How about it? What did we do last night?
Last night
we watched WWE Evolution
House. And then I watched this pro wrestling that we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, we didn't watch women's wrestling. We went to a haunted house.
So, yeah, getting to our modern wrestling news segment. Last night, we went to a really nice haunted house.
And didn't watch
dragons and creepy twin girls who flew over our heads while shrieking and all sorts of stuff.
There was a lot of moments I found erotic.
There was that one girl who was on a table wiggling her butt a bunch at us. I don't know why that was supposed to be scary, just because she had like fright makeup on or something.
Yeah,
I saw what you were hiding under that weird gauzy dress girl who was up on that sacrifice table.
Every time the chicks in creepy costumes went flying overhead, it kind of turned me on.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why.
They were wearing like pants under their skirts, but you could still look up their skirts, and just something about that's exciting.
I think it stems from one of my earliest childhood memories of like what sex was.
Flying women? You watching the flying nun?
No, it just boils down to the fact that much like Dan Aykroyd, I want a ghost BJ.
Yeah, ghost BJs were one of the first sexual things that a whole generation of 80s kids encountered.
Yeah.
What's happening to that greasy, disgusting man under those bed sheets, Dad?
He was the real nightmare.
For sure.
I felt bad for that poor ghost girl having to give Dan Aykroyd a hummer.
You sure it wasn't Slimer under there?
Disgusting blob. I'm going to have to hold him myself.
I just assumed it was Slimer.
Could have been.
Going after those hot dogs. You know what Slimer likes.
Whew, see what you did there.
Mm-hmm.
So, WWE Evolution, did you catch any of that?
No, I didn't catch any of it. I wouldn't even watch men wrestling, let alone women
finishes?
Wrestling. There weren't any big finishes. Nobody cares.
So you're saving up for Saudi Arabia's SmackDown Saturday Slammery Super Show?
It's Trump's America. You can go to the Saudi Arabian Kingdom and have murder shows, and nobody cares. It's a glorious time we're living in.
But that's the one you're going to watch?
No, I'm not going to watch that either, but
okay.
I support it just because it's part of our ongoing hellscape, and the sooner we get to the apocalypse, the better. This has been really drawn out.
Apocalypse
whenever I
now.
Like picture the end of the world... And I didn't picture it as being so boring and so long. I thought it'd like happen over the span of a couple of weeks and it'd be like crazy. No, it's just like one atrocity a day, just spaced out enough so like you just get numb before the next one happens again. And it's interminable. It's gonna go on like another 5 years before the whole world's finally in flames. I don't got time for this shit.
Love the smell of
somebody needs to get their fingers
napalm
on the nuke button.
In the morning.
Shoot some nukes.
Smells like
take us out of our misery.
Victory. Someday, this war's gonna end.
We got a rundown to get into.
Yeah.
A rundown of wrestling.
80s wrestling. Talk about
80s wrestling. This week, our rundown, it's brought to us by, vitamin D pills. This is coming at you. It's officially Halloween is over. We're into November.
Oh, yeah, it's dead.
Temperature's dropping. We're not going to see the sun for like another 6 months. Yeah, everybody's got to take care of themselves out there. A little bit of self-care. Get that vitamin D pill every morning when you wake up. Fight off some of that winter depression. You're going to need it.
Yeah.
You're not going to see the sun again forever. Maybe never.
Like Nate
Adams. We might shoot missiles at the sun.
Give your girl the D.
Sun could explode.
Oh, shit. Is that real?
Of course it's real.
Oh, God.
This is a rundown of Primetime Wrestling from April 18th, 1988. I don't know what you're all thinking. Like, oh, yeah. They got to it. The episode we've been waiting for. That historic episode. April 18th, 1988. It's infamous. People have still been talking about it from all the great shit that happened on this show.
All of it.
That was a lie. Nothing good happened on this show, but let's get through it anyways. First match, Bam Bam Bigelow and Don Morocco are in a tag match versus Butch Reed and the One Man Gang. We join it in progress.
Do you abbreviate his name in your notes as OMG as well?
Yeah, I definitely have it there.
That's a fun time.
Oh my God!
So we join it in progress where there's a big brawl going on. So I thought, like, hey, this will be quick and like just brawly and big guys throwing each other around and then it'll be over. But nope. For some reason, that brawl settles down, and then we just get into like a 45-minute long match.
Settles in.
Like, I feel like, yeah, just settle in and watch these guys, people, because they're going to be killing some time on this show. Eventually, Morocco gets the pin after he hits a stun gun, but the camera misses the pin, so...
He doesn't hit a stun gun. He just ducks Reed, and Reed just kind of stun guns himself.
Yeah, whatever. The camera didn't catch it. Second match... We got Reno Riggins, real looker out there. He's out
Tennessee's
there versus
own.
Outlaw Ron Bass. Bass does a bunch of boring stuff for a long time. It's one of those squash matches we complain about where there's no offense from one side, but instead of just pinning the guy, the guy who's winning just keeps wrestling and keeps wrestling and keeps wrestling.
Oh, I want to show off this move.
For no reason. And eventually, Bass gets that facebuster thing he does, and then he wins it.
He stole it from Harley Race.
Finally, a big... Highlight of the show, Brutus Beefcake's in there versus Gene Watson.
He's a cool guy.
Beefer, he keeps it short. He ends it with the sleeper.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Islanders versus the Killer Bees. Everything feel like a time filler up to this point? Well, we got a 2 out of 3 falls match, so now we're
going to
kill some serious time. Just in case you thought something might happen on this episode of wrestling. Tama gets the first fall after Haku kicks Brunzel in the face. Brunzel pins Tama for the second fall. After, like, I think he got atomic dropped, but then hit a clothesline after he was atomic dropped. They did some sort of crazy spot, like getting atomic dropped,
made his
clothesline more devastating.
He's up in the atomic drop. He's able to reach back, tag his partner, no sells the actual atomic drop, goes right into a, clothesline.
It was explosively stupid.
It was nuts.
Third fall was completely blown. I wasn't even quite sure what happened. There was, like, a botched pinfall, and then the Killer Bees... Didn't do a save, even though, like, Brunzel hit the guy before the ref counted 3, and the ref still just counted it, and what we've been, like, conditioned to believe is, like, a save just didn't count as a save, and, whew, I don't know. Either way,
Haku's clothesline looked good, though.
Haku's clotheslines always look good. Haku is big, beefy dude, beats people up. Mm-hmm. I love it. Ted DiBiase versus an even beefier dude, Frank DeFalco.
Frankie DeFalco.
This guy.
They build him as Frank. But his friends call him Frankie.
The announcers apparently are on very close terms with him. DiBiase wins with his new debuting finisher, the Million Dollar Dream. Jim Duggan, he's in there versus Pete Sanchez. He, hits his 3-point stance thing he does, and then he wins. And then Andre comes out, and there's a little bit of a confrontation between the two.
Tension.
Before Duggan chases him off by swinging his board around like a crazy person. I feel like these two are on a collision course.
For fun.
Strikeforce, former champions out there trying to reestablish themselves on the scene. They do a good job. They beat the Los Conquistadors after Tito hits a flying burrito.
He's a cool guy.
One Man Gang. We're seeing him again. He's back out there. OMG.
Pulling double duty tonight.
He beats a jobber named Van Van Horn after like a sort of sloppy gourd buster that was more like a faceplant type thing.
Yeah.
Hercules. and Junkyard Dog are our featured match of the evening. Mm-hmm. Hercules the Mighty versus Dog the Junkyard. It ends in a double DQ after they just start attacking each other with chains. So, featured match.
Junkyard.
Non-finish. And then we're done.
We were done as soon as this thing started, Nate.
Let's get into what's bound to be our quickest five count we've ever recorded.
Bound for glory.
Because I've got nothing to talk about when it comes to anything that happened on this show. This is really going to be a stretch.
That's what I thought. And then I looked back over my notes and I was like, oh, that's a quick five right
there. I nearly have zero notes.
My first is going to go to the Bam Bam and Morocco versus Butch Reed and One Man Gang.
Opening tag match.
And at first you're going to say, what are you, nuts? Mm-hmm. But my statement is, better than I expected.
Wow. No, it was a decent match if there was any reason for these guys to be tagging with each other, against each other, and there was any storyline in place as to what we were watching. Like, it might have been good, but there wasn't. So it was just like guys wrestling for no reason.
I was coming off of, 5 hours of sleep, a full day's work.
What a sob story.
And like a 15-minute power nap.
Yeah, there we go.
And so the last thing I wanted to do was watch wrestling, but it was like, well, I'm contractually obligated to do this. And when that was the start of it, all I could think was, oh, Jesus, God, no.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I was expecting just awful, I'm not going to be able to stay awake through this.
No, I feel like the work was decent.
Yeah. And so I was like, huh, it was better than I expected.
My complaints with it was just that it went on for so long.
You know what the best part of the match was?
Tell me about it.
That Bam Bam had his brother at the show. Todd.
Is there another chubby guy with flames on his head out in the crowd or something?
No, the announcers stated that Bam Bam had his brother in the audience. Todd
Bigelow?
Todd Bam Bigelow.
I missed that completely. I was too focused on watching all those one-man gang arm bars and shit he was doing.
Shame on you, because Todd Bigelow, greatest to never have the strap, if you ask
me. That's possibly true. I wonder if Todd Bigelow, just like a straight-laced accountant type fella, maybe like works at the same office as Davey R. Scheister.
So, could be.
Everybody's always shocked to hear that he's got like a toothless, flame-headed, big 400-pound biker brother.
Dead.
Well, back in the day here. Back in the day when Bam Bam was still alive.
Bam Bam went out of his way to share with the announcers that Todd was a scrawny guy and not huge.
Wow. He's talking a lot to the... Did we get Bruce Pritchard for all these first handful of matches? There was a couple in a row we did. Either way, more Bruce Pritchard trying play-by-play and being super boring and like doing like a really, really half-assed trying to be Vince McMahon announcer voice.
Way to throw it right into my number two, and that is Bruce Pritchard's really bad at announcing wrestling.
He found his niche doing character work as Brother Love. As the straight man play-by-play guy? No, thank you. Shoving him out there trying to make him do this?
Even trying to do like a bad announcer, like I can't even do it as bad as
if you took like the phoniness of Vince's announcing and mixed it with just like the boring nothing of Tony Schiavone's announcing, you got Bruce Pritchard trying to be a play-by-play man right there.
Good point.
It's brutal to listen to.
Tries to do jokes sometimes.
Later on when we got some Vince and Jesse together and like it was finally a break from these guys, I was just like, oh, thank God. God they're mixing it up.
Never been so happy to hear Vince McMahon in all my life.
It's just like I'm home again. One, two, no, he didn't.
Bruce Pritchard. Yeah, it wasn't good.
No. So I got like two of my points are all about this tag team match.
Oh, okay.
The first one was, I think there was just as many managers on the outside of this match arbitrarily as there was guys wrestling in the match.
It
was ridiculous.
Let's see.
We had Oliver Humperdinck out there. We had superstar Billy Graham out there. We had the Slickster out there. Okay, there's three instead of four. Either way, it really struck me.
Was there only
how over the top that Vince's commitment.
There was four.
Is there like a fabulous moolah out there too for some reason?
It was Slick, keep going. I'll figure it out.
Yeah, either way, at some point, Vince was just like, I'm super into managers. Everybody on the roster is going to have a manager. Even the good guys, I'm going to stick fucking superstar Billy Graham with him as a manager. Because managers, they sell feuds. They sell promos. They're very worthwhile. They raise our product to another level. They're so important. I need to have a ton of them. I need to have a dozen of them on every show. And then at some point, he's just like, God damn, pal, no more managers ever.
I hate fun.
And I can't imagine, like, how do you get from one extreme to the other when you got three or four managers or whatever standing around for this one nothing tag match? And then for, like, the most recent 20 years of wrestling we've watched, he allows nobody but Paul Heyman to be a manager ever. What made you forget, like, how much managers add to matches? How they just add more movement and more fun and more crowd heat and how they accentuate feuds and help tell storylines. We need more managers in pro wrestling is my point.
Bunch of those managers ran a train on underage Stephanie McMahon.
Oh, is that what happened?
Yeah, that's what happened.
Why do people keep having sex with underage Stephanie McMahon? You're just going to get erased from the business.
Because she always had those giant yabos,
Nate. I guess that's true. A second point involving this match is just a little missed opportunity here, I feel like. Bam Bam Bigelow, I never liked him as a good guy. Whenever they just had him doing cartwheels and being happy, like I was like, this sucks. He needs to be a bad guy.
Yeah.
And these two makeshift teams they had thrown together, it looks so dumb. It was one big fat like guy that looked like he was from the streets, teamed up with a muscle guy against another big fat dude looks like the streets from a muscle guy. One Man Gang and Bam Bam Bigelow looked awesome next to each other is what I'm saying. They should have been a cool ass fucking tag team. Yeah. These guys could have been a dominant heel tag team back here in 1988. Yeah. If you would have Bam Bam be a bad guy, give them some sort of like annoying manager and just have them go out there and brawl and destroy people and talk about just like being scumbags from the streets.
True. True.
Why didn't that happen?
One's from New York, the other's from Jersey.
Yeah, there's just a natural connection.
Oh, no, I'm sorry,
there.
Chicago. One Man Gang's from Chicago.
Oh, yeah, they did build in Chicago. Okay.
We don't either way, they're city
bridge
boys.
Bridge and tunnel feud in there, that's even better for them.
Yeah, either way, a couple of city boys.
So, yeah, that's my second point. These points are not like arbitrary jump-offs to larger discussion things.
This is what I saw.
Hey, there wasn't much going on here. I had an observation.
Correct. I've got a third.
Perfect.
It's the Killer Bees versus the Islanders is what brought it to my attention.
Okay.
And that was, hey, tag teams.
Sure. I'm listening.
That's pretty, like, that's the point.
It's like,
hey.
Here they are.
Tag teams. Vince has two different shows/companies now, SmackDown and
there
Raw.
There you go, yeah.
And he can't get a single tag division
and
over
205 Live and
either
NXT
one of those.
And
yeah. NXT can get tag teams over.
Oh, yeah. Real good.
Raw and SmackDown, no. They've even brought up the
and
most
they had
successful.
That Revival guys and those American Alpha guys just like red hot and ready to be the hottest tag teams that have ever done anything in tag team wrestling ever.
And then just brought them up to piss the fire right away.
Neither of them ever even accomplished a single goddamn thing. Had like one featured match or anything once Vince got his hands on them.
One of them's not even a team anymore.
I'm surprised that one of them still is. Yeah. I haven't heard anybody mention either of them in a coon's age.
That Chad Gable's tagging with Bobby Roode, so that should be good.
Oh, good for them getting thrown together in a makeshift no reason for them.
No. It's
team.
Not. It's not makeshift. You see, because they both come out.
They both washed out doing other things. They're thrown together
to Bobby Roode's glorious music. But Chad Gable just stands in front of them and acts excited and has a black and gold vest with his red and blue trunks.
Listen, I'm not anti-Chad Gable. I'm anti the way that they fucking book tag teams.
Yeah, no,
pro wrestling.
That's my point. Tag wrestling for a company that always, even in the 80s, they were claiming like, tags, that's filler. Tag teams is filler.
They never pushed their tag team as main event acts.
Never,
but they always had a solid fucking tag division back then.
And
lots of good guy teams, lots of bad guy teams. You could throw them together in different combinations. At least a handful of them were booked strong enough to look like the like main guys of the division.
What year was that where they had the Survivor Series tag team?
I think it was this year. They did it for the first two. I think
it had to have been
88 and 89, unless there was a Survivor Series in 87. Whichever year it happened.
It had.
They did it 2 years in a row.
Right. And it's
five teams on both sides, 10 teams, 20 guys. And they were all like
very evident right here.
Strong, established tag teams.
It's very evident here. You're watching this show. It's clearly all these matches have been taped at like those 5-hour marathon shows that nobody wants to fucking
sit through.
Everybody's sitting on their hands.
Everybody's on their fifth hot dog.
But anytime...
Even Slimer can't have another hot dog.
Anytime an established face tag team comes out, these people lose their shit, man.
Tag team wrestling can be fun. You got more guys in the ring. You got more movement, more chaos. There's just more, you know, opportunities to create unique wrestling scenarios. It's great. Everyone loves tag team wrestling.
I have always, always, always hated the Killer Bees. Always thought they were lame.
Wow.
But like,
got their stripy tights. I mean,
watching them in the late 80s here, these guys are fucking over.
Oh, yeah.
It's ridiculous.
They jump a lot.
Yeah, people love this shit.
Dropkicks, leapfrogs. This shit used to be spot fest wrestling.
That's true. So Vince...
They're the young bucks of their time.
The young old bucks. The young old bees.
Maybe that'd be... What was the Jim Powers tag team that they...
Young Stallions.
The Young Stallions. Maybe that could be another one. Maybe they're the Young Bucks. They're,
Jim Powers
their
and
names
Paul
are
Roma.
Very similar, actually. Other than, you know, Paul Roma's left arm probably outweighs both Young Bucks put together. Yeah. Dude's built.
Powers, too.
Powers
That's
is
a
fucking
beefy
built.
Fucking
yeah.
boy.
For just being like the young... this is amazing, the difference in body types from then and now. Just not even like steroid abuse because they're all so built. It's just... How wide their shoulders are, how big they are as guys, that we got like Roma and Powers as like the young pretty boy tag team, when now the young pretty boy tag team would weigh like a collective 120 pounds. Insane. Why are little boys wrestlers now? Yeah. Where are all the big grown men who want to be pro wrestlers?
What a number are we on? Does any of this matter anymore?
I think you did your number three, which means I should all do my number three. I just wanted to give a shout out to Gene Watson and what a god-tier jobber he was in there against Brutus Beefcake. This guy, no physique, completely
whatsoever.
Pale, just like a dumb-looking ginger dude. This is the epitome of what we always complain about with jobbers, whereas you want your jobber to look like a big, burly, tough guy type. Like, maybe not trained and can't take on your, like, elite athletes, but still tough and could beat people in bar fights. But these jobbers, they get, just look like scrubs. They look like substitute teachers. They look like they haven't been in the gym an entire day in their life. They've never been in a bar fight once in their life. There's nothing tough about them. It's
like
just
our
loser.
Guy, Alan, whatever.
Like, your pro wrestling business, your company, looks like a loser company when the jobbers you're bringing in don't look like athletes.
Yeah.
You have to have some sort of level of quality. You can't just be like, all right, local wrestling fucking school, we're coming into town, send us five guys to be jobbers for our TV. No, you have to employ your own jobbers. You're making yourself look like a Bush League company. You look like... fucking Jim Crockett Promotions when you're putting these guys out there, Vince McMahon. Do you like that? You like hearing that? Well, it's come to this. It's something you gotta hear.
Reno Riggins was a beautiful boy.
Yeah.
You know?
He had some nice, like, I felt toned. Like a little bit ahead of time with his tights. They looked like 1992, kind of like skater guy tights.
Yeah.
And this is all the way back in like 1988. And I'm like, this guy is on the cutting edge of what's cool.
Ahead of his time. But Gene Watson... his mom dropped him off at the arena before she had to go to work.
Mm-hmm.
So it was early in the morning,
mm-hmm.
which means the sun wasn't out yet. So another day where he successfully avoided the sunlight.
Sure.
To keep that skin, you know, nice and pristine.
He looked like a wad of just uncooked dough that had been rolled around in like Ralph Malph's shaving clippings.
He looked like when you spit out a piece of chewed up original flavor Trident.
Oh, there you go.
But with like red hair.
Mm-hmm. Ugh.
I got a four? Four question?
Yeah,
mark?
Let's go with four.
I'm going to give it to the Ted DiBiase match.
Okay, in there
because
with thick boy Frank DeFalco.
Frankie DeFalco.
Frank E. DeFalco.
The reason I'm giving it love is because it was a great way to reestablish DiBiase coming out of a loss from that WrestleMania Championship tournament.
He didn't get the belt, but now he's learned a new hold, Matt.
I want to say he was on the week prior coming out of WrestleMania. but it was like clearly like a bullshit match that they taped beforehand.
Yeah, we've taken a couple of Halloween episode breaks.
Yeah.
I'm losing the thread here of what we've been talking about.
I'm already trying to think about what Thanksgiving excuses we can come up with.
I've
got
so many Thanksgiving excuses, Matt. That's been exactly where my brain's been.
But this match here, great job reestablishing him. It was a squash match, but it was just long enough where they could even fit in the little pop-up window promo, which this episode had a lot of,
of the pop-up window promos. It was nobody really saying anything of any note, but it always, especially when you're having just these boring throwaway matches, like, hey, give me some more stimulus. Now there's something to listen to in the corner over there. I don't just have to watch this guy in an arm hold for 5 minutes.
They'll do those nowadays. They've been using them again in current wrestling.
I love hearing that.
But they don't do it right. They try to make too relevant a point, and then it's just distracting because the in-ring work is much more intricate.
There's fast-paced. No breaks for a pop-up window to come up
Confusing. I don't know. So you're not really paying attention to either
too much stimulus,
and then you just walk away after 30 seconds of not knowing what the fuck just happened. But this one
works. There's probably a feed at the bottom of the screen showing you like people's tweets too while this is happening.
Right,
too much shit going on your screen, WWE.
Yeah, just because ESPN does it doesn't mean everybody else has to do it. They did a great job. DiBiase, like you said nothing of note, but he was just like, fucking DiBiase.
Like, there's my laugh you guys like.
Deal with it. You probably might not like me. But then they established his new finisher, the $1 million dream.
Now you got to wonder.
Effective.
If this thing's going to beat a bunch of guys in a row, what would happen if he ever came up against Macho Man again? Yeah. Would Macho Man go down to this new hold he's learned? There's some new intrigue to a rematch, potential rematch.
And the best part of the match?
Mm-hmm.
He did the hundo stuff.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking about that as he's doing this, knocking the guy out, putting the $100 bill. They had so many of these things back then. Brutus Beefcake cutting a guy's hair, fucking Jake the Snake draping the snake on him, DiBiase sticking the... Soon, a couple years from now, we'll have Taker, and he'll be putting people in body bags.
You're a year out, brother.
So this was a huge thing that people loved whenever a guy beat a guy and then did something to him after the match, and it's something that has completely gone away. And it's shocking to me now, as over as this was and as many times as they tried to rip it off back then, they got like nobody on their roster and haven't had anybody on their roster for I don't know how long who had this gimmick
Boogeyman, where
he does something to people after the match.
Boogeyman.
Is Boogeyman the last one?
The last one I can think of.
And he was never over in any way, so I mean, maybe he ruined it for everybody. He might have ruined it.
One of the last biggest things wrestling ever saw use that gimmick, and that was NWO spray paint.
Yeah, NWO spray paint was the last hurrah of doing things to people after you beat them. Which somebody's got to come up with a new spin on this.
It's all about bullying.
You want to get over? You want to get to that next level? Come up with some spin for your character where you can do something to people after you beat them.
Give me some kind of dick. You want to get Mojo Rawlins over?
No.
I'm going to tell you right now. Just let him be a bad guy still, but just make him complete college frat guy douchebag.
Just giving people like wet willies after he beats him?
No, he beats a guy, like knocks him the fuck out, and then like draws a dick on their
head. There you go.
Bam!
Ooh,
guy's instantly over.
It's the Vince Russo idea, man. We're not in the Attitude Era anymore. No, I can't be drawing dicks on TV.
We change his name from Mojo Raleigh to Mojo Willie.
Maybe he could do the thing where he puts shaving cream in their hand and then tickles their nose with the feather.
Nope.
That's
nope.
PG WWE.
Dicks on faces.
That's
no
a
way around
PG
it.
WWE
dicks
shenanigans.
On faces. Or else.
All right, Vince. He's laying down the law. You heard him.
Yeah, step up. That was my four.
Okay, my four is just the next jobber who I loved I want to talk about, which is Van Horn. Because Van Horn is one of the dumbest ring names I've ever heard, and it's so dumb it comes full circle and is awesome.
Yeah.
And B, this is a man who is on television. He's on a big broadcast. They're presenting him as a WWF superstar.
Correct.
And he clearly cuts his own hair. He's a man who gives himself his own haircuts, and you're just going to like put him on TV as some sort of entertainer. At the very least, have this guy sit in a fucking chair with your makeup ladies and have them trim up his like uneven. I just put the clippers on a 4 and gave myself a mullet fucking hairdo.
Right.
Who are these hillbillies that you're putting on your television and telling me that they deserve to be on TV?
As Bobby the Brain Heenan pointed out, they're the same humanoids and hillbillies that have the dish in the front.
Satellite dish in their front. I thought that was a good little burn when Gorilla is trying to hawk anybody who has satellite dishes in their backyard can buy this replay of WrestleMania 4.
Saying through his teeth, with those fine-looking dishes in their backyard.
Back in the 1980s when satellite dishes were huge and gaudy and the only people that had them were straight-up fucking hillbillies who lived too out of town to be hooked up to cable. And Brain called him out on it instantly. You're just trying to hawk this to fucking hillbillies.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Either way, this guy, Van Horn, cool name, looked like an idiot, needed a haircut. Somebody took a Flobee to him, and he looked awful.
His build was there, and his face was fine. In fact, I thought it was just Reno Riggins again, but with a bad haircut.
Somebody stuck a hillbilly Halloween wig on him.
I was like, whoa, he cut his hair, like, poorly. And it was like, oh, Van Horn, that's a different person altogether now.
Get a makeup chair set up in the back, something. Give these guys a once-over before you put them on my damn TV.
See, and here, again, we've been giving current wrestling credit when they do well.
Mm-hmm.
This is a perfect case of it.
Yeah.
I was showing my girlfriend all those nudes of Ruby Riott on the internet before she made it to the WWE.
Oh, gross.
And she's like,
that was a thing.
How's she look? And I was like, Deece, you know?
You know how she looks? She looks West Lafayette, Indiana good,
right.
I bet.
Yeah. Because
that's where she's from.
She's got Indiana. Small boobies and a big butt, which is nice. I was like, just don't look at her face because it's all jacked up.
She kind of reminds me when I look at her of the Danny DeVito penguin.
Yeah.
I get a little bit of that going on whenever I see her.
Definitely get more of that in the nudes because she's got like a real short, awful Alterna Girl haircut.
Oh, I'm definitely going to be binging that then.
No makeup sensibility whatsoever.
That is the next thing that I bing.
So she got to WWE, and they figured out how to put makeup on her and do her hair, and it draws away from that giant Danny DeVito nose, penguin nose has. So moral of the story is, kids,
they've really turned things around when it comes to dressing somebody up before they put them on TV.
One
good thing about modern wrestling.
If you're listening to this podcast, you're probably streaming it on your phone, so we're going to let you pause it real quick. Go ahead, just Google Ruby Riott naked. It'll show up.
Mm-hmm.
And take a look-ski for yourself. And welcome back to the show now.
I think I got to say, I feel like they've gone a little bit overboard with all the day-glow hair that everybody's got. Like,
day-go hair? You can't say that kind of shit. That's racist.
Is there a single like woman on their roster right now that doesn't have bright blue or bright pink or bright something hair? Like, right now, if you want to stand out as a women's wrestler, just have a natural hair color. People won't know what
Ronda
the fuck you are.
Ronda Rousey has natural hair.
Okay, good for her. They've been giving her weird, like, I'm a 14-year-old white girl who just came back from vacation at Jamaica, like, braid things going on recently, though, which is really weird
fair.
To me.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay, so she's disqualified. I guess that's Charlotte's natural hair, isn't it?
Charlotte,
she blonde?
Just
she
a blonde.
Blonde?
Maybe not her natural blonde, but she's just a normal blonde. It's not like a bright yellow
or
like
Kelly Bundy
Barbie.
White, which I wish it was.
Oh, that Maurice.
That was Maurice.
She really rocks that Kelly Bundy white bleached hair, and she rocked it well.
Oh,
she used to do that thing where she'd fling it around and then act like it was like all nice looking and not trashy looking, and it was like, Maurice, you get it.
I got a number 5.
Okay. Hit me with it.
This comes from the late, great Bobby the Brain Heenan.
Mm-hmm.
He was doing one of his great bits where he says something clearly showing off how much of a shitheel he is.
Mm-hmm.
And Gorilla calls him out for it. And then Brain goes right into his wrongfully persecuted routine.
There you go.
And he's just spitting shit out. And he comes across with this little line right here. Do unto others as long as I survive.
You gotta wonder if he ever just, like, every stupid little quip he ever thought of, he'd just write down in a notebook and be like, I gotta use this shit. Like, he's gotta have this stuff, like, stashed away somewhere.
I know.
Old man joke books.
I mean, I know I have everyday lines that I always want to work in to my everyday.
Gotta have your go-tos.
And which I've told you about it before. Working in a jail is great because constantly working on new routines and new bits.
Also, just like a new stream of people coming through all the time. Correct. That haven't heard all your old shit, so it plays like it's new every time.
It's awesome. Like in 8 hours, like I'm a comedian that's
God bless been on the road
for like a month or two, you know, just hitting shit town after shit town, giving them my comedy and being like, ooh, that one did not land. Oh, the pedophiles enjoyed it though.
Just you know, change the end of it a little bit, speed up the timing at the beginning. I'll see if I can get a laugh with that next convict.
Gangster disciples, no. Pedophiles, yes.
Okay.
Huh. Odd.
Start gearing my stuff more towards pedophiles. That seems to be my demo.
That's my sweet spot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna piggyback off that number five, Bobby Heenan, and just talk about how next week's Primetime Wrestling is Bobby Heenan's 2-year anniversary, and he really built it up. He says he's gonna have special guests for us.
Yeah.
He's saying he's built his own set. He's saying he's got a new telephone. He's saying Miss Betty might show up.
Yeah.
And after
I thought this week was the new set.
No, same shit.
Is it the same shit?
He was hyping it up.
That's right.
Yeah, after all these nothing matches that weren't between people who were in any sort of feud together and no sort of issue was pushed forward whatsoever, and we were just watching wrestling for the sake of wrestling.
Correct.
It felt great to finally have something hyped and something like, hey, look forward to this, tune into this. Bobby the Brain Heenan's having some sort of big celebration for himself next week. That should probably piss Gorilla Monsoon off. He'll get annoyed with that. Bobby Heenan's going to be obnoxious and annoying when he's doing it. Maybe that'll be fun. Maybe I shouldn't turn off pro wrestling and never watch it again, ever again in my life.
No.
They always got to have one little thing to trick you into coming back.
Yeah.
That's all they need. Just that one little thing, man. That's how Vince keeps all these fucking people watching his shit, even though nobody actually likes it. Have you ever, like, gone on the internet and seen people talk about how much they like pro wrestling? It's not a thing that exists.
No, it does, actually.
It's just that's everybody being part. Like, another terrible show. Why do I keep watching this? I hope next week's is better when I inevitably watch it.
What you need to do is get yourself...
I'm looking directly at my meathead cousin right now as I say this. Creating the scenario of somebody who hates everything he sees on wrestling but will never stop watching every little bit of it.
This will make your head break.
Okay.
Get on our Instagrams.
Mm-hmm.
We follow wrestlers just to have content, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Look at and piggyback, whatever.
We're in the wrestling community now.
Wait for them to post something and wait for one internet troll to shit talk it and then watch all their fans just be like, you're bad. Why do you even follow this man?
Oh, man.
Delete. Obsolete.
One of the grossest, most depressing things you can ever do is just go to any celebrity's Instagram account and just click on all the people replying to their posts
and read some
who just like talk to them as if like they're friends and they're gonna get some sort of response or something. It's just like deluded sycophant after deluded sycophant, like pretending like celebrities are their friends, like just hoping for one day, like someday if they reply to enough celebrity posts, one of them will like acknowledge that they exist and like reply in some way,
which is unlike us, you losers. We have real celebrity fans.
Yeah. The celebrities we're living follow your dream. Us. We don't follow them.
We're living your dream. We're taking over the internet. Now we're going to step away for a little bit. Speaking of new sets, we need to make a little money so I can do a little, you know,
a redesign
little work
in
here.
In the studio?
Well, all this wrestling stuff that I've been amassing at toy shows, we're going to need a way
sure
to display
that
I'm
gonna it. Allow this.
Yeah, I got that Ultimate Warrior punch bag that you didn't want. It's in the trunk, so we'll probably bring it in while we play these commercials right here.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What do you want when you're hungry for something that you really got to have? Like hot dogs. From AMPM with mustard on the bun. Two hot dogs. Just 89 cents. AMPM is the one. Say hot dogs. Hot dogs. Oh, say it one more time. When you buy the dogs, get a 12-ounce coke with just one more dime. So when you get that special taste, remember AMPM is the place. You want it? We got it. AMPM Mini Markets.
What's that great smell? Chicken. Oh, yeah. And stovetop stuffing.
Your mom is making stovetop instead of potatoes?
The celery, the onions, and all that great stuff.
Think I could stay?
Sure.
Mom, can I eat at Jimmy's?
Yes, but we're having chicken and stovetop.
What time?
8.
What time are you eating?
6, I think.
Hello, Mom.
You can never get enough stovetop stuffing instead of potatoes. And to make as little or as much as you want, try stovetop in the canister.
6 a.m., day after Christmas.
Oh, wow.
No one's home to find a sound.
Just wanted to record a 3-count.
Car seat is freezing.
You know what I like about that song?
What's that?
It's how whenever it comes on, yeah, whoever's around like has to tell you about how it's about abortion. As if, like,
you know, that song's about abortion.
As if they're the first person who's ever told you that that song's about abortion and that they're going to blow your mind or something.
You know what that song's about? Abortion.
It's like that like 15-year period where anytime Jewel came up, whoever you were with had to tell you.
You know, she lived in a van.
As if they were the first person to ever tell you that Jewel lived in a van. They're going to blow your mind. I know that Jewel lives in a fucking van. Everybody knows that Jewel lived in a van. It's common knowledge.
We're not rehearsing these bits. This is just the same awful life we've lived where we know what you, the humanoid, is going to say to us.
Yeah. Oh, what? You're afraid of clowns? You think feet are gross? Sick of your trite shit that nobody believes, but everybody just repeats over and over again because you've been trained to repeat it.
You all think feet are gross because of that scene in Boomerang where Eddie Murphy won't get down with old girl because her feet are nasty. Right?
Which one's Boomerang?
I don't know.
Okay.
With this girl last night, man, she would. Beautiful.
She was beautiful, but her feet were jacked up.
Were they?
Yeah, oh, I pulled the covers back.
Yeah.
It was hammer time. I should have known something was up. I seen her shoes. It had little bumps on the top of the shoes when I met her, but I thought maybe it was an old shoe or something. And you would never, ever think a woman that fine would have hammer time in her shoe.
Come on, man. You don't fuck her feet. Damn.
After Vampire in Brooklyn? No, before Vampire in Brooklyn. Because I think he was still relevant when Boomerang came about.
Yeah, it seems like the end of his relevance.
Playboy,
and like
ladies.
Soon after that, he went into his like, "Hey, everybody, I'm not a comedian anymore, so don't ask me to be funny, please."
Yeah.
The only time I'm ever funny is when I'm voicing a donkey from now on. That's my rule.
Or picking up trannies.
You think he was cracking jokes when he was out there?
Oh, you kidding me? You ever tried to get a tranny in your car?
Never, no.
Yeah, you gotta bring a little something to the table, pal.
I like keeping the inside of my car clean. I don't invite people in very often.
Remember when our friend Spacehog picked up that prostitute in the South Heights on accident because he saw a woman standing in the rain and he thought he was being chivalrous?
Well, to be fair, he's nearly legally blind.
But, like, why would you pick up a woman in the pouring rain
also
in fucking, like, Ford Heights?
You also have to factor in the many theories we've thrown around about him that he might be a serial murderer, and it might be a thing
that's
where
true.
He just picks up women who he thinks are alone and vulnerable and could disappear very easily without too many people looking around to see where she went.
Yeah, we need to real quick make an amendment, a little, you know, whatever, to our last episode about See No Evil.
We got some corrections to make.
Not a correction as much as it is a huge revelation that was brought to the light for us.
Illuminating our way.
From Davey R. Scheister, who, if you don't know, is not only a huge Undertaker fan.
The biggest that I've ever met.
He's a huge Kane mark as well.
A Canaanite, Matt.
A Canaanite, yeah.
He's a Canaanite.
And he goes, well, I was telling him about the episode, because even though we talk about him all the time.
Undertaker, Kane Taker, he celebrates the whole Taker family.
I was telling him about our most recent show, because even though we mention him in the shows, he hi-hats us all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I don't listen to that.
Oh, sorry. You've got a podcast? I'm not familiar.
I've got a successful job and a family.
Yeah.
Go fuck yourself.
Once you got that Sarah tattoo erased from your neck, you finally got hired into a real office.
Yeah, shut up, David. We got to get the sound drop from that, from Halloween, the new one.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes, you know what Vince's original idea was for that? I'm like, no, I don't. And then he leads me to this little article right here.
I know a lot about Kane, so.
So I do.
Let me tell you.
Here's a little interview that was on that 411 Mania website that the kids are on.
No shout out to that.
Yeah.
Whatever that is, we're not shouting it out.
We're telling you to boo those people. So they had an interview with the director or the writer. It was the writer of See No Evil.
Wow, and, how'd they land
and
that?
It goes like this. I get a call from Gregory Dark, the director of See No Evil. He says, we've got a little problem here. This call is from Australia. I said, what's the problem? He goes, Vince has a suggestion about the movie. I said, well, it's his movie. He goes, Vince wants his scene in the movie where Kane's character pulls out his penis and he wants it to be 3 feet long. I thought there was a connection problem. I said, Greg, can you just back up and repeat the last line for me?
You never met Vince McMahon before? You heard that and you weren't like, of course that's what Vince wants. You thought there was a connection problem?
He goes,
where'd they find this idiot?
He goes, yes, Vince wants Kane's penis to be 3 feet long, and none of the producers are saying anything about it. So I
should
sat
be saying,
there.
Great idea, Vince.
Yeah.
We'll get that script changed right away.
So I sat there. I go, oh, this is not good. This is not good. This is really not good. In the right movie, that's genius. That's absolutely brilliant. But not for this
movie.
But
not your shit movie. Not your boring movie that doesn't have nearly enough sleaze.
Yeah.
Where you think you're some sort of auteur. Think you're making a Sundance film. You fucking idiot, whatever your name is. No, you're making Vince McMahon's gross horror movie.
He's just a loser.
We were talking all fucking night last week about why wasn't this movie sleazier? Why wasn't Vince on set just like suggesting childish gross things? It turns out he was. Somehow, these fucking quote-unquote filmmakers, these
fucking
guys for making shit for MTV and making
art
all these
school washouts.
Ugh, all these softcore pornos thought they knew better than Vince McMahon. How did Vince let this happen? How did he let these people not take his suggestions?
If any scene was going to get deleted from what that movie should have been, it was so they could avoid an NC-17 rating, you know?
Sorry,
like,
Vince. We all loved your idea.
But we got to scale it back a little bit.
This movie's literally been banned in America, so.
Your 3-foot penis can't talk as well. Like,
so
you
that,
need to kill him, Kane. Leave me alone, 3-foot penis.
I want this information to clear up some things, but really it's raised more questions. Last week I was like, where was Vince? Why wasn't he on set taking control of this? But now I've got even more confusing questions. If Vince was in contact with these guys and he was trying to take control, how in the hell were they able to filter out all of his ridiculous stupidity?
We poo-pooed this director's credentials.
But what, he has none.
As it turns out, Vince surrounded himself with two Hollywood of people. This director was too highbrow for him.
I gotta ask this director and this writer a question. Did they ever do a bunch of cocaine in a hotel room with Hulk Hogan and write a movie script in one night? No? Then keep your fucking mouth shut and listen to an expert when he's telling you how to make a movie.
Like, why didn't they make a real softcore porno with Val Venus?
I just feel like it wasn't the right time. Vince's mind was on too many different things. He shouldn't have been launching a film studio at that point. It was snake bit from the beginning.
Maybe we can reset up.
Rewrite some history here?
Yeah.
Is what I'm feeling. We're getting into this 3 count. I'm saying, what if we rewrote some history by sending ourselves back into time to the 1980s, Bill and Ted style?
Excellent!
Injecting ourselves into 1980s professional wrestling and, you know, shaking things up, changing things. This is the basis of a concept for what we're going to talk about here, where I said, what if we were 80s pro wrestling managers? If you got that manager's license, that coveted manager's license that allowed you to accompany a wrestler to the ringside, allowed you to negotiate with the promoters,
first
get
of
them
all,
TV time.
That's a hard piece of paper to get that manager's license.
That's why this is all sort of a fantasy scenario. Yeah. Like, it's very unlikely. Only the best of the best, such as superstar Billy Graham and the Slickster and fucking
Paul Jones.
The other 12 or 13 people that were ringside to that tag team match.
Paul Jones.
They're the only ones who get these managers. So if you were a manager, you had your pick of the litter. You had to put together a stable of clients to represent. Who would be your ideal 80s stable, Matthew?
Well, first of all, I'm going to let the fans know that we'll peek behind the curtain here. This is all just stemming for
giving up all our secrets.
How manic you've been about managing your fantasy football team right now.
Well, you know,
I know you got the fantasy
my
fever.
My quarterback's been shitting the bed the last 2 weeks. I'm starting to panic.
Can you name me one NFL quarterback?
Colin Kaepernick.
Plays? Nope, he does not currently
okay,
play.
That's the,
currently plays.
The only NFL player I know the name of
Come
is Colin Kaepernick.
Guy from the Packers, maybe?
I literally only know Colin Kaepernick. I could not name you one other NFL player.
Oh, there it is.
Because football is such a boring sport.
There it is.
I don't even have qualms with it trying to shut down, you know, its athletes' God-given right to protest, or the fact that it fucks up all these dum-dums' brains and turns them into Chris Benoit killers.
Yeah,
if it was
cool.
entertaining, I would love it, even if it was doing that stuff, but it's so boring.
Agree to disagree. Okay,
probably
so
the most boring sport next to baseball.
Football and baseball.
NBA is more boring than both.
No. Football and baseball both have a lot of rules, so
too
we just
rules.
Have... One rule in particular for this three count here, building our stable.
Rules are meant to be broken.
You got to have three different picks.
Okay, yeah. So we went with a classic, tried and true four-man stable setup.
I'm going to break my count down this way. I'm going to go tag team,
yep.
Then mid-card, then top guy.
Okay, see, I'm doing the exact opposite.
Okay.
I'm starting with my top guy.
All right.
Going my mid-card guy, and then... finishing up with my tag team. But either way, this is based in the theory that this is the best way to set up a stable. You get four guys, your established main eventer, your up-and-comer who can eventually challenge that guy when your stable breaks up if that happens, and you have a tag team to be like the backbone of it.
Right. I'm going with a tried-and-true tag team. Mm-hmm. I'm not putting a hodgepodge team together.
No, you're not just sticking two guys as a new tag team?
I'm grabbing a team that's already a team.
Very interesting.
I've seen enough of their work. They've held belts. They're a successful team. I'm a big fan of their work. I think it's a great foundation. I want Mike Rotunda and Ricky Steiner.
Wow. The varsity club.
I want them on my stable.
We got a club within a stable.
Yeah.
This is a very strong build.
I'm not taking a Kevin Sullivan.
Seeing as you're the manager, are you going to approach these guys as a manager the same way that Kevin Sullivan did? Like maybe get yourself some like fright makeup, start like dressing like a Satanist of some sort?
No.
That's not the way you're going to do it?
I'm going to go the John Goodman character in Revenge of the Nerds like we've talked about.
I feel you.
And I'm going to get these knuckleheads.
Somebody's got to.
To the greatness they belong, you know?
You just got your asses whipped by a bunch of goddamn nerds.
The upper echelon, if you will.
Out there in a nice college sweater, maybe, a whistle around your neck.
Doing no,
a little whistling
no,
out there.
I'm just the polo. You got to do the polo tucked into
classic
the khakis.
Polo. You can have
with like the hat.
Well, I was going to say one of those old
and
school
aviators.
Like fedoras or whatever the fuck it is that I'm picturing an
old-timey. No, I'm doing the snapback trucker hat like Goodman's sporting.
Okay,
nerds.
Yeah, strong.
Yeah.
Okay, so way I approach this was I kind of set myself down in a real time and a place, and I picked from a whole pool of guys that were all in the same place at the same time. I'm not like doing like a dream thing where like I'm picking this guy was in his prime in 83, this guy was in his prime in 88. Nothing like that.
Mine also falls into those guidelines.
So it's interesting that we both went that way instead of creating some sort of like complete fantasy scenario. I need to be grounded a little bit. I need to be grounded in reality when I'm working here. So I put myself in a dying territory.
Oh.
1988 AWA.
Oh.
I feel like these people, they were ripe for an upheaval. They were ripe to create some interest, to stir some shit up. All they just needed was the right storyline and the right focus. So I'm going in there. I'm calling myself Vern Gagne's illegitimate bastard son, who he never acknowledged.
Nate Gagne?
And I'm going in there with a chip on my shoulder as Nate Gagne, and I'm pissed off at Greg Gagne, my brother, my half-brother, who he acknowledged.
That shitbird.
Shepherded into the wrestling business and made him a wrestler and always pushed him to the top. And I'm making it my mission to take over this wrestling company because I want my slice of the pie. I'm bitter.
Now, clearly,
I'm a young punk.
Your mother is some ring rat that he banged in one of the territories.
She works at a truck stop or something. Truck stop waitress.
Right.
And I found out who my dad is, and now I'm going to do whatever I can to weasel my way into his empire.
That's backstory. I like that.
So there's a little bit of backstory there. This is personal, but also there's a little bit of a new blood angle I'm going with.
Ooh. That's one of my favorite wrestling angles of all time.
Talking about the new blood every week, so I'm plucking the new blood out of early 2000s WCW. I'm bringing it all the way back to 1988 AWA. Why did this company fail? It's because they just kept the same guys on top. And they had a bunch of young hot guys.
Fucking millionaires.
They wouldn't push as their new thing, and they wouldn't change the way they presented things. It was still old school.
The fucking thousandaires
club. So I'm putting together a group of guys who are young, who are crass, who are hip. And we're going to go out there. We're going to look like punks. We're going to piss all over the AWA. We're going to make fun of Nick Bonkwinkle's pompadour.
Fuck tradition.
It's going to be some real NWO shit. We're not going to dress fancy. We're not going to talk fancy.
Nah.
So I'm getting my main event guy, my centerpiece.
What's this around my belly? It's a fanny pack, motherfucker. It's cool.
It's super cool. I got tears in the knees of my jeans.
Fuck yeah.
The centerpiece, the crown jewel of my stable, is a man a lot of people call the greatest to never win the big one. That's Kurt Hennig.
Oh.
Cool Kurt Hennig.
Cool Kurt.
That's if you count the AWA belt as not being one of the big ones, because he did win that.
He did.
He did win it with like his little heel turn right at the end. They made him champ. They made him heel. But they never pushed him all the way as like the new centerpiece guy. Everything was going to be built around. They half-assed it. So what I'm doing is I'm giving him a big stable to put around him to prop him up and support him and make him that main event player he should have been. So let's do it right. Let's redo Kurt Hennig and his AWA championship run and his heel turn.
It's a cool gigantic belt.
But with the stable
belt
behind him, it's a giant belt. We're probably going to spray paint new blood on it.
Nice. The FU stands, you can figure out what the NB stands for.
Greg Gagne.
But the FU stands for fuck you.
We're spray painting new blood on your back.
That's cool. That's a cool
thing. I'm stealing everything from the 90s and doing it in the 80s because I'm a time traveler. I've got the benefit of knowing cool things in wrestling that haven't happened yet.
Nice. Second thing I'm doing is bringing back the Katie Vick storyline then. Oh, no, wait. No, I'm not. I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that. I got a mid-card guy.
Fly well in the 80s.
I gotta have
sorts of cocaine abortions going on.
Not my main guy, but I gotta have that lieutenant.
That
secondary
guy.
That lieutenant.
Mm-hmm.
And every once in a while, like maybe he's even gonna show a little more worth than your general. You know?
Oh wow, he's nipping at his heels.
Well, like you said, the inevitable implosion
could happen
of your stable, because obviously we're both setting up heel stables because that's the only wrestling you and I know.
And also, face stables is just a dumb thing.
You think I want to be a face?
Why would you be a gang of good guys? Yeah. Like we hang out together, but then we don't interfere in each other's matches or something?
Yeah.
What is that? That's not a thing.
That's why Tama Tonga's right. You should all give fuck yous to the Bucks and Kenny Omega.
Mm-hmm.
They're still doing it right, damn it.
Stables are not about selling t-shirts. They're about group beatdowns.
My second guy actually held the top title of them all.
Wow.
But I don't think he should have been in that light. But
bumping him down.
Maybe with my stable, we could have gotten him
down to
there
mid-card
in the correct way. But he would have been great as a mid-card guy. Athletic, strong, great in the ring, terrible on the mic.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't need to be on the mic because he's got me. I can take care of it for
him.
I'm talking Ron Damn Simmons.
Okay, another college athlete.
The big,
beefy
boy.
You got a theme going
boy
here. He's legit, just highly educated.
Yeah.
Classy college boys.
That's right.
Jim Ross is going to be loving people. This stable.
Yeah. Oh, Ross was going to have to hate him, though, because we're bad guys. Yeah, but he's going to respect their pedigree.
He's going
to
spend most of your matches talking about your fucking college records and shit, though.
He's going to respect the pedigree. And this man has it, and he's a great wrestler. You know, he's shown some flashes.
Definitely.
He just can't talk, but he doesn't need to. He's my heavy hitter.
He does a catchphrase.
He's my heavy hitter. Yeah, you could have brought damn.
Does a power slam and a catchphrase.
You don't have to do damn in 2000. You could have brought it all the way back to 88.
People said damn back then.
When I'm just doing, you just got your asses whipped by a bunch of goddamn nerds.
Damn!
Yeah, that's powerful.
Mm-hmm. And then, probably Rick Steiner will be picking boogers out of Rotunda's nose or something while all this is going on. Because they're always doing goofy shit in the background.
I slap him in the face, and Simmons is just like,
damn!
It works.
This is a great
thing. It's shaping up. You know what I'm saying?
No, we haven't even got to your crown jewel yet.
Nope, we have not.
Waiting with bated breath. But before we get there, I'll go into my middle pick, which is my mid-card guy. The guy who is the secondary guy to the guy. And when approaching this question, I felt like I want a guy who's not just going to be the second tier guy who backs up my main guy. I want to go with a heater. I want the big guy. Oh. The big guy that everybody else stands around.
Yeah.
He's the bully of your group.
You know
he's
I love that
enforcer.
Big guy, little guy dynamic. And, you're speaking my language
he's
here.
He's going to be standing behind my main guy with his arms crossed while my main guy runs his mouth about how he's smarter and better than everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to pick a guy who did a lot of great stuff in the AWA. He's a young guy. He was never used properly. I'm talking about Big Scott Hall.
Hey, yo.
Oh, him and
Kurt Hennig, former AWA tag champs, so it's not a bit of a stretch to just break them off into singles, but still have them teaming up. And the problem with Scott Hall in the AWA is he was a big, goofy face who they were trying to make their new Hogan the entire time, and Scott Hall is not cool as a big, goofy face.
Nope.
He's cool as just like a mean, overconfident, doesn't give a shit about anybody, pissing on everything around him, bad guy.
Shooting guys in an alleyway.
I want him to have the opportunity to do that, and I want, you know, to give him the opportunity to really work as the big guy. The big guy stronger than everybody, because his whole career, he was just surrounded by giants, and you didn't realize that he was one of the biggest guys ever.
Yeah, he's
here
mammoth.
In the 1988 AWA, he was mammoth, and he could have been that, like, big, huge monster on the roster.
Right.
So he's going to be my enforcer of my group. The guy, I don't know, maybe he'll win that TV title that they tried to bring in at the end of the thing. And he'll hold that. And who's going to be able to take that off of him? Fucking nobody.
Oh, he'll look giant next to Hennig. That's nice. I like that.
That's my heater.
He was fucking jacked in AWA.
Oh, yeah. He was on a lot of steroids. Jacked. All you got to do is shave that mustache off his face so he doesn't look like such a goofball. You got yourself a winner.
He was just hitting the gyms every day. He was a gym rat in South Florida.
Then he became a drugs rat.
Yeah, that's cool,
too. His physique changed a little bit.
And then he went to
but he got way cooler. His promos got better.
Banger. Yeah.
I'm a rat.
So I got Rotunda. I got Steiner. Two idiots. I got solid brute strength and Simmons.
Gotta have somebody in there just to bully people around.
Yeah.
If you're gonna be like a gang, you gotta have one big bully everybody's afraid of.
And he could have been.
Oh, yeah, sure.
But he never fully got the opportunity to embrace
deep,
this role.
Booming voice. It's very intimidating.
Damn!
He did some heel work, this guy that I'm gonna pick for my crown jewel.
Okay.
In this era. But not the way it could have been. I'm going to bring this guy in. He's my stud. He's the biggest. He's the baddest.
Wow.
He's going to be the dumbest, too. He's the meathead.
Uh-huh.
The fucking star of the team for my new varsity club that I'm building the right way.
Varsity club.
The right way. I'm talking about Jock's Jock, ladies' man. We already know he looks bitching in a pastel polo. I'm bringing sexy Lexi Luger.
Lex Luger.
As my number one.
Whoa. This is blowing my mind.
He's a guy. Lex I know what you're saying.
Not a guy you're a fan of.
But he's played He's played a little college ball in his day, you know. Had a cup of coffee.
In the Canadian Football League?
Yeah, he was in the Canadian Football League. I don't think he even played college ball, so maybe this is a stretch for him to be on my varsity. But he's getting graduated in because of his fucking... He's the guy that the upper league schools bring in, and they're like, no, he's really passing these classes.
Sure, yeah.
And maybe that's what comes to question with my stable. They're like, this guy, he didn't go to that college, and I'm like, no, he was there. He went to Northwestern.
And we've got some very shady-looking records that we've pulled.
Yeah. But either way, he's my guy. He's fucking number one, numero uno. He's that guy.
I gotta tell you right now.
Best athlete in your high school. All the girls wanted to bang him, and all the guys hated him because he's dumb as fuck.
You're going to be cutting all this guy's promos for him, right?
Correct.
Okay. Whew, thank God.
Except for when I let him talk a little bit, and he says something really stupid.
Oh, no.
But then I'm there to fix it.
Uh-huh. No. See, what Lex meant to say.
Yeah.
Just take your shirt off. All right, easy, big man.
Take your shirt off for the ladies, fella.
Flex a little bit.
Yeah.
Flex a little bit.
Flex for the ladies, my man.
And your t-shirts are too tight, too, Billy!
And then I straighten it all out. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But think about it. He could have been...
Guys, rule in the NWA.
If you would have had
rule in the
somebody
NWA
there
in 1988.
To just let him be the fucking meathead that he always wanted to be.
Yeah, he's...
And channel it properly.
Classic, just like Revenge of the Nerds villain.
Yeah.
You could cast him as the guy picking on the Revenge of the Nerds guys and... It'd be perfect. Nobody would question it.
Oh, just giving people wedgies and shit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then, like, when Ron Simmons eventually realizes, this guy's a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
Like, what am I doing with these assholes?
That's where he's saying damn all the time. Whenever Lex starts saying something stupid, you just see Ron shaking his head no in the background. Like, oh, here we go again.
And your t-shirts are too tight too, Billy! Damn!
Yeah.
Stand here next to this idiot. Making me look like a fool.
Finally realizes that he's stuck with all these honky snowflake morons.
There you go.
And like,
and he brings in Butch Reed, and we got Doom destroying everybody.
Yeah. There's so many storylines there. It works out. That's why I said, you know, the Varsity Club.
So new what Varsity Club. We're getting rid of Kevin Sullivan. We're adding a couple of fresh faces.
Yeah.
I feel like it's going to make this team the main eventers they should have been.
I'm going to make it even more 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And not the new Varsity Club. We're going to dub ourselves the real Varsity Club.
There you go.
Just like the Ghostbusters.
Let's go, Ghostbusters!
Okay. I got to wrap mine up. I got my crown jewel, Kurt Hennig. He's got it all. He's a technical wrestler. He's a great athlete.
Yeah.
He cuts a great promo.
He does.
I got my heater, Big Scott Hall. He's going to be the cool, cocky, calm guy. You know, if he loses a match, maybe it's because he got overconfident and made a mistake. Other than that, he's dominant. So now I need my tag team. What I want is just a couple of shitsters. A couple of little... annoying gnats buzzing around your face. A couple of guys who, if they ever got to fight you one-on-one, they turn total chicken shit instantly. And they're begging off. The only time they're ever on top of things is when they run and they run and they run and then they sucker you in and they double team you and they double team you
there
and they double team you. Or they can stand behind Big Scott Hall and not worry about what's coming their way because they got Big Scott Hall in front of them. I want... couple of the pussiest little pretty boy piss ants that everybody watching this with a beer in their hand and just fucking a head of balding hair is gonna hate
their guts.
I want to see something that I never got to see before because nobody was ever smart enough to do it. I want to see the Midnight Rockers as heels.
Ooh.
Shawn Michaels, Marty Jannetty.
Yeah.
You're not pushing them as the underdogs. You're pushing them as the chicken shit heels that are like little vulture scavengers picking the bones.
Oh, picking the carcass. Yeah, I like it.
You got Shawn Michaels. You got Marty Jannetty. You got Scott Hall. You got Kurt Hennig. A bunch of hard partying idiots Who knows if we're ever even going to show up to half these tapings, because we're going to be so hungover. There's going to be a lot of fucking speedballs in the morning trying to get us out of bed.
Fucking man, like, we all know what became of Scott Hall, but if you're putting Party Marty in your stable with Scott Hall...
Get those guys together. See what happens.
All you're doing is just...
Fire it up!
You're just speeding up that death of Scott Hall by
New
like
Blood, 1988.
10 years,
we're
going
to take over the AWA like a bunch of fucking fire. Just fire taking out a forest.
If you put this stable together, I just want you to know, like, let's say you guys debut in March.
Sure.
By June, one of them's dead.
By June, the company's dead, I feel like. If the company's going down, let's go out in a blaze of glory.
No, I mean, like, one of them will literally be dead.
Hopefully, it will be me. There's a whole reason I'm surrounding myself by these guys.
Yeah. Oof. Your stable got cryptic.
My stable fast. Is unstable. I put together an unstable.
You're the Brian Pillman of stables.
Either way, we're going to be rolling in the chicks, dude.
Oh, that's for damn
rolling
sure.
Rolling in the chicks.
That's for damn sure. Hennig, Hall, and Michaels used to ride together for real in AWA, right?
I mean, Hennig and Hall did for sure. I don't know if the Rockers might have been too new at that point to be rolling around with those guys. But
no, I want to say there was at least a time or
two. I think that's definitely where Hall met Michaels.
Yeah.
Like,
I want to say, yeah, there was a night or two when Hennig was like, no, we're bringing out this kid Michaels.
He seems like a real asshole. You'll love him.
This guy's great. Everybody hates him.
The only problem is he hangs out with this dude, Marty Jannetty, who's just completely out of control.
Too fucked
up.
And
I'm Scott Hall telling you this.
What's so great, too, is that like Marty Jannetty never came across as anything other than boring.
On the camera, just milquetoast boring guy. And then little did we know as children. Yeah. This dude.
Guy was fucking insane.
Zoot, party animal.
Oh, God.
And like when I look back at him now, I can totally like see it. Like, oh, yeah, he's your fucking uncle who never gets his life together. Like, for sure.
Yeah.
Like, I know that guy.
Because his whole demeanor like that, like you said, milquetoast awful,
you could tell
whatever.
Once like it got to be the early 90s and like Sean like started changing up his shit and like doing 90s fashion, but like Marty was still just pushing like late 80s fashion when he came in. He's that uncle everybody has who just got stuck in a time and place and like never grew past it. And it's just like, I'm 1988 for the rest of my life. I'm fucking ride or die.
And like his boring whatever persona that he came across as, it wasn't that he was trying to be boring. That was just him trying to like present himself as a real human being for just a couple of fucking minutes
because
the family
like,
was around.
Play it cool.
Yeah.
Play it cool.
They don't know you're fucked up.
Even
man.
It out, man.
Just,
even it
they
out.
They don't know, man. Like you're getting away with it. All right.
I don't know. I never got to see
Thanksgiving dinner's almost over.
Maybe in my fantasy scenario, if we get him on as a heel, some of his real personality will start coming out.
You're on cocaine right now? That's fine. Just get on out there in front of that camera,
could
man.
Be the best thing that ever happened to Marty Jannetty.
He could have been the biggest, damn it.
Rolling 3, 2.
Mr. Rocker Marty Jannetty here. Rock and roll is strutting and strolling. And you know what? No, nobody does it better than New York Championship Wrestling. Did I say it right this time? What's it called?
Championship Wrestling from New York.
Championship Wrestling from New York. So y'all better not forget it like I just did. It's the best. And I will be glad anytime they want to have me come up here and do some rock and roll and strut and stroll and slam and jam and move and groove it all night long.
What could have been, man?
Yeah.
Whatever. What will be next week?
What will be is we go back down and watch some WCW.
Oh, that sounds terrible.
No, because it's the April 16th, 1988 episode, and we got to get some follow-up on what the Midnight Rider's doing. There's a new guy, the Midnight Rider. What sort of things are going to happen with him around, Matt?
Fingers crossed that it's interrupted by Atlanta Braves baseball, but I think this is a full hour and a half episode.
There's always a chance. Fingers crossed for baseball.
Well, tune in next week to find out Matt and Nate's fate with professional wrestling. And remember, it's Baby Woman Blow, so stay single.